flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A 3-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swan hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I'm Brian Shackman along with John Senecal. This is episode 181. Unbleeping believable. A second time guest who is a man I've known since 1988 is Dominic Rivers. And I think this is the second time you've been on the show, Dom, and I think I mentioned it the first time. What, the stuffed animal, red stuffed animal, was it a pig? It was a pig, right?
It was a pig wearing a Reds cap. Yeah. And thanks for having me on. It's nice to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, and Dom was, I mean, again, you can go back into the archives and listen to it. I bet he was in the first 50, but Dom has been a rotisserie, a legit rotisserie. Because for all years they called rotisserie, they called it Roto when Roto. It was fantasy, yeah. And it wasn't Roto. Yeah. But he's an actual rotisserie guy. He tried to get. I played it once. I didn't freaking understand any of it, so I just quit. But today we want to talk about a bunch of other stuff. Get some perspectives outside of, you know, our
region,
our tunnel vision. Yeah, Dom lives in Denver. He grew up a Reds fan.
The Sunshine State.
And Denver has per capita more sunny days than any place in America.
He got it.
What
Matt got it.
What's is it?
The reference. Old school.
Why is that? What's the reference?
It was old school, right?
That's a movie quote?
Yeah. Anyways, moving on. Dom is from Denver.
So we talk about the Red Sox and the Yankees a lot here. It's expanded to be different stuff in terms of the podcast, but, you know, whether it's... let's start with the Yankees, actually, because I think it's more compelling story. Although, if you're a real insider, the Red Sox, even though I'm still salty on them, have done a decent job this offseason. But, you know, the Yankees didn't sign Juan Soto, and they replaced him with basically three guys, right, John? Who did they replace him with?
They replaced him with Bellinger, Goldschmidt, and Max Fried.
And the first ultimate question is, Dom, if you were Brian Cashman, would you have spent the money on Juan Soto?
It depends what the money is. I mean, in order to actually outbid Steve Cohen, I mean, for all we know, that could have been, you know, $1 billion. We don't know how high he was willing to go. I love Juan Soto. I think it's was, for now, it seems like it was a great trade for the Yankees, even though Michael King had a good year and seems rather promising, even for a one-year rental. So, no, I would have tried, but... The money he got,
would you have given that money to him?
Yeah, because it wasn't far off from what the Yankees
were offering.
Like,
if that was the dollar figure for the Yankees, would you have done it?
No, as much as I love Juan Soto, I think I could have spent $650 million, whatever it was, better than just Juan Soto. Frankly, I mean, you kind of laid it out. Would I rather have Juan Soto for the next, whatever it is, 10, 15 years, or Max Fried for the next six or whatever, and Goldschmidt, and then have all this other money to play with? I think I would have rather had the latter.
I was going to say, John, you may not, the day Soto signed, you may not have felt that way, but 2 weeks later you did.
Yeah, I mean, well, because you look at the player, right? But then it sucks because you lose the player, but then you look at the financials involved and the length of the contract, and like we said, he's never going to play that contract out and be the top shelf player he is. But with the DH, he'll be able to hit as long as he stays healthy. But to hamstring yourself into that much money going forward, it's too long. And I was honestly surprised of the length of the contract, because I thought Major League Baseball was kind of trending away from that because they got scared off by the Bogaerts.
How many
deals.
Years was it?
15 years.
15 years.
Yeah, and it's weird because, you know, you think about Juan Soto and everyone's, oh, he's 26. Well, you look around the league, and I believe Vlad Guerrero is younger than him. Vlad Guerrero, I don't even think, has turned 26
yet.
No
way.
Yeah, and you feel like Vlad Guerrero has been in the league for like 15 years.
Forever, yeah.
Right, and then you got also like Fernando Tatis. I think he just turned 26, and he's coming off a year, he was suspended 2 years ago, right? So it's interesting that they make such a hype about his age when there's such great talent around Major League Baseball who's, you know, arguably almost just as good. Kyle Tucker, you know, same thing. He's the same age as Soto. So I would have to say that I think I would agree with Dom that having more players is better. Did the Yankees spend it wisely? I mean, I think they spent it accordingly, right? They got a player in Bellinger who's a team favorite because he comes from lineage of the Yankees, and he's a solid player if he's healthy. And they traded and got Devin Williams, which will assume some of that contract. But, you know, the big signing's Max Fried. You know, that's a big gamble. Pitching's always a big gamble. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the American League East is not what it once was, and who the hell knows what Baltimore's been doing. So,
yeah.
I mean— The path to 90.
I mean,
wins.
I think for like a numbers guy like Dom, I would be more excited by a Red Sox team than I am a Yankees team. Because the Yankees, yes, they look great on paper with Aaron Judge and all the big stars. But when you look at that lineup, I mean, really the only person in that lineup that is a proven performer is Aaron Judge. When you think about it. I mean, Goldschmidt is a good player, but he is on such the back end of his career. It's ridiculous, right? And then, Jazz Chisholm, I mean, really, look around. What has he really done? I mean, he's been okay player, but he's not a superstar.
I know, but I like him. I don't know. I think you're underselling the Yankees.
Jason Dominguez is a 26-game player that you're going to put into left field, right? 26 major league games coming off a major injury. You're going to put in left field, and you're going to entrust him to play left field for the New York Yankees.
That's what you want.
Well, exactly, that's what you want. But will it work? Will it work? Look at all the big prospects in Major League Baseball that came up, and it doesn't work, and they go back down, and next thing you know, oh, well, he's 22. He was supposed to hit. I hope it works, but that's a lot of faith to put in.
What do you think, Tom?
I think that the Yankees and Red Sox both have a lot of money and capital to improvise if they have to. I was actually thinking of Dominguez as the one player on this, as I look at their depth chart right now, who really could exceed expectations, right? I mean, you're right, he's unproven, but the Red Sox have a ton of guys. I'm super jacked about Roman Anthony, but, you know, Rafael at some point could pop. Most of the Yankees, some of these guys are great. You know, forget about Judge, but, you know, Bellinger, you kind of know who they are is what I'm saying, right?
Stanton.
Stanton, he'll miss 60 games most likely.
Right, but when
he exceeded my expectations last year. So I think, you know, for good reason, you have a whole podcast about it. These teams both have good fan bases, good traditions, and high expectations. I think that the way the roster's currently situated, I think it's more likely, let's say these guys both make the playoffs, both have a good enough record to make the fan bases pretty much happy going into the playoffs. I would bet if I had to, that the Yankees are going to have to make a lot more, you know, key moves at the deadline and whatnot. The Red Sox might have the pieces there. It might be a disaster, but I think they have enough young guys that I think they're going to exceed expectations.
And that's what makes them dangerous, right? The Red Sox have a major league roster. Granted, some of the guys are young, like the Wilmer Abreu's and the Rafaels and the Brian Bellows. But they have a minor league system that they could go out and crush with, which, like, the same thing the Orioles did, but the Orioles dragged their feet, right? The Orioles dragged their feet on that. But the Red Sox, like you said, if it's time to strike, they can strike. The Yankees, I don't even think they're ranked in the top 20 in minor league systems. If they are, they're close to maybe maybe 20.
Well, I mean, Dominguez and Volpe is all you've ever heard for five years. So, I mean, I don't know anybody else. And I don't know. The Red Sox, you guys are way more concerned. And listen, there's some great young talent, and maybe the pitching, you know, from, you know, whether it be Hauk or Whitlock, whatever. I mean, there's a lot of people have to do well. And then they talk about trading Casas. I don't have any idea what they're going to do, but I know this, that if they do better than expected with their young talent and Jaron Duran continues to grow and this and that, and Trevor Story stays healthy, the thing is, will they actually do something at the right? Say they're on track for 90 wins. Will they make a move? Will they trade somebody who's a top prospect to get somebody else? And I think it remains to be seen whether they will do that. The other thing is, I truly believe that if Devers is the quote-unquote leader of the team, they will not win anything. I don't think he's in any way, shape, or form an A-level guy for that stuff. I just don't think he's the personality. I don't think deep down he wants it. And I don't think he can carry a team on his back. I just don't.
Well, it seemed like he got a little saltier last year when things weren't going his way. And you know, maybe we're making too much of it. But am I correct? He spoke out a little bit more in the press, or just maybe nudged things a little bit more than you would have expected before?
Yeah, I mean, sure. But I don't know. I think of him as not that kind of guy, and he's not vocal. And I mean, he understands English perfectly, but he doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, he's like him and Otani. It's kind of ridiculous. I bet Devers and Otani speak perfect English if they want to.
Exactly. Well, that's something to hide behind. But I mean, the bottom line is, if the Red Sox, like you said, Brian, if they are in position to strike and they don't do it, talk about an erosion of the fan base. It'd be gone if I was them. I mean, like you said, if they have a shot at 90 win season or whatever, and at the break, and they don't
trade Blaze Jordan or Mayer. I want those guys to come through, but you're going to have to trade one of those guys.
You have to. And like I said, I think
they already did up the off season. Who was the catcher? I believe they traded.
Teal and Montgomery. They traded. Yeah,
Teal. Yeah, that's right. So. I think the flip side of one of your questions, you know, I said that the Yankees especially would be willing to throw in some money, maybe eat a bad contract to take on a good player. The Red Sox, I'm less confident. I think these teams will both be, you know, in playoff contention, and they're going to make the playoffs. If either of these teams got off to a bad start, I have much more confidence in the Yankees, even though they have less prospect capital to work with. They've just shown a willingness in the last couple of years to do something, whereas the Red Sox have been the kings of, hey, we tried. You know, going back to your question with Soto, I mean, I think when he gets signed for $650 million or $600, whatever it was, I can accept we tried from Hal Steinbrenner. I mean, that's a lot. But the Red Sox didn't try hard enough with Mookie Betts. And I know hindsight's 20/20, but even then, it seems like, okay, this is a franchise guy. They didn't do it. And so now every move they make where they don't go the extra mile is going to be questioned. And I don't see that with the Yankees at all.
Well, plus, the Yankees are hungry. I mean, they were there. They were there, and they lost, and so they're going to be hungry.
Right, and the Red Sox, I do think there's a prevailing notion within ownership that they can make money no matter what, and they brought the fan base four World Series this century, so they feel like they have time. And he's John Senecal. He's so funny. What do you want to do?
I was going to say, we should talk about the Rockies and the Reds.
Well, I get to that, I want to ask about the financial side of it. Yeah. I think it's a better segue. John Senecal, Brian Shackman, Dom Rivers here, and Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 181. Because you talk about the Soto money, and you know, John pointed out that the money isn't deferred with the Mets. He paid it up front.
Yeah.
But as somebody who crunches the numbers, like, the Dodgers, I wanted to ask you this. Like, the Dodgers have a ton of deferred money. Does that mean that they don't plan on owning the team in 20 years, or what does it mean to you?
Without any inside information, I think that it does suggest that some point in time the group of owners would say, hey, you know, a lot of this bill is coming due. This still is a great brand. Let's sell and get out of here. I think you may be right. I don't want you to think that I'm some venture capital expert or anything like that. I'm not. But yeah, I think that that's astute. That eventually, when he getting like a million a year for the next several years, and then he's getting, you know, umpteen million for the rest of his life.
Well, but it's not just him. I mean, they have $1 billion in deferred contracts right now.
Yes.
Total. I mean, think, that's insane.
But does it, because this is the segue into the Rockies and the Reds, is that if teams are willing to do that on the high end, does it make it impossible for the mid markets to either come close?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Who can do that in Major League Baseball? Who can defer $1 billion in contracts?
I'm not super worried about it with the likes of the Dodgers, or if the Red Sox and Yankees decided to do it. If the Reds and Rockies were deferring $1 billion, then you could get into a situation like the Texas Rangers got in, you know, the A-Rod years, where the team literally, you know, I don't think it was just the team, but Tom Hicks's assets in general
went bankrupt. Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, oh man, $1 billion in deferred money. That's a lot, but what's that franchise going to be worth if it went in sale now? $10 billion? I mean, it's the Broncos here sold for like $5 billion.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers are a much bigger, better brand. The world's unpredictable. I mean, not to get too far afield, but you know, these LA fires, there's going to be a lot of people who are right now who are there saying, I'm getting the hell out.
Yeah. Are they not going to be showing up to games because they won't be able to afford to go to games, and they won't live there?
So there's always unpredictability. So I think it's worth taking that risk if you are the Dodgers to defer $1 billion, just like I think if you are the Mets and Steve Cohen's worth, you know, I don't want to say 20 or whatever, but more than $1 billion he's worth. But
27,
you know, once you're right, Juan Soto could, you know, have a catastrophic injury, and LA could all of a sudden become a much less desirable place to live. There's always risk, and I'm much more a player's guy than owner's guy, but it does kind of make me cringe a bit when people say, oh, it's only $1 million. It's only $60 million here and there. It's a lot of money if Juan Soto ends up doing a Chris Bryant for the Rockies, for example. I mean, that was a third of the contract, and it was like $200 million commitment, maybe $180, and the Rockies are going to get nothing out of that unless – something miraculous happens this year. Well, and that to me proportionally is much worse for the Rockies than even if Juan Soto totally flops. Steve Cohen can recover from that a lot easier.
Well, and look just down the road in San Diego, look what's happening. I mean, they were shedding money getting rid of Soto, and they were and they have these contracts that they're hooked into with Darvish and other players, Cronenworth, and Tatis, and they're fighting over the ownership of the team right now between the Seidler family. So that's who knows what's going to happen there?
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
You know, would a team like the deferred money, would that be just a road to ruin for a mid-market team to even try it? If your franchise values are inflated anyway, would a mid-market team start to adopt that philosophy? It doesn't seem like any are.
If it's a mid-market team that has ownership that's not highly leveraged, then I think it's fine. I mean, we got to remember there's still only 30 major league franchises. There are more than 30 gazillionaires out there. I would love it if, you know, George Clooney and a couple, you know, billionaire actors bought the Reds and spent some money and made it their vanity project. Kind of, you know, Peter Seidler, we didn't know this. He knew he was dying, so he just spent his money and wanted to get a World Series, and it didn't happen. So, to your point, yeah, all things being equal, if it's a small market team with an owner who's worth $1 billion, it could be a problem. The Reds in particular are interesting because they have their principal owner is like the way Steinbrenner was when he bought the Yankees, right? You probably know the history. When he bought the Yankees, it was for, you know, from CBS, the low millions, and he was I don't know, a 10% owner, 5% owner. He did not. He was the general partner, but he had a plurality of interest. He didn't. He was not the majority owner, and that's kind of the way it is with the Reds. So it would be catastrophic if, for example, the Reds gave Ellie De La Cruz a $400 million contract for the rest of his life, a Tatis-like contract, and then a Wander Franco situation happened, right? That could kill the franchise.
But how do you see it working for a team like the Reds? I mean, I'm going to say the Reds because the Reds are so far ahead of the Rockies right now in player development, yeah, and the team, exactly, as they are. We'll talk mid-market. Like, do you strike now and try to do like an Acuna contract with someone like an LA De La Cruz? Or, I mean, yeah, they have a lot of great young talent. I mean, they got even Hunter Green. I mean, he is one of the most untalked of pitchers in Major League Baseball. Yeah. And you look at that dude's stats, I mean, he has the possibility to be a top 10 Cy Young for the next 10 years, right? But what do they, yeah, do? Because it's hard to attract talent there if you're not going to give them big money, if you're not going to be proven to win. But you got Terry Francona coming in, who's a proven winner. So what do they, yeah, do?
I think you do lock up guys like Green and De La Cruz. When they did do Green already, when they can. But everybody's got a price, right? And I'm pretty sure maybe you guys know De La Cruz is a Boris guy,
right? And that's what scares me. Like he'll force him to free agency, right?
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, you never know. I mean, clients can insist on. I think I would bet that the Reds will have him another 4 or 5 years, and then they'll probably go somewhere else. But they surprise everyone with Votto, but and if you look back at Votto's career, the last 5-10 years, there was a lot of hand wringing. Oh, was he worth the money? He was totally worth the money. You know, so
especially what the going rate in Major League Baseball was at the time,
well, especially with intangibles, because yes, people love him
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to.
And there, go ahead. Different intangibles with De La Cruz, but yeah, it's not the leadership intangibles. It's the marketing and the branding, the most exciting player, et cetera. So they have to make that decision, but they have locked up Green for in a few years into his free agency for a good price. So
but if I look at like Ellie De La Cruz, and like you said, Boris represents him, and say, you know, he's not a free agent for another 5 years or 4 years, but if they come to him with a contract that says, oh, we want to sign you for, you know, say 7 years at $30 million a year, right? Now, yeah, if I'm Ellie De La Cruz, I'm all over that. But if Boris, he could be, listen, all you got to do is just keep doing what you're doing, even batting 260, and I'm going to get you that, yeah, plus $10 million more a year for 10 years. Like, that's a hard decision to make. And I wonder, yeah, if, given the current climate with Boris, how he's kind of striking out with Alonso and striking out with Bregman and just kind of flopping with those deals, I wonder if his stock is kind of going down a little bit.
He's done this a million times, though. He's ebbed and flowed. I think what you learn is that the strategy works with the top end, not the mid-range guy.
But there's so few of the real top, exactly, end guys now.
Right, but that's the point. And I think, right. Go ahead.
Yep. You guys hit on something. If you're Pete Alonso, you might think, did I pick the right guy in Boris here? If you're Ellie De La Cruz, then what happened with Juan Soto is probably very encouraging. So that will be interesting to see, but we have a few more years. I hate doing that, but the Reds have a few more years before they have to make that decision. I hope I'm not getting too exuberant about Terry Francona coming in, but I think he has missed a piece. They were favored to nearly or actually make the playoffs last year, and being, you know, 4 or 5 games under 500 was disappointing. And I think that it's a good sign. Not that Francona can do it all, but they've made a few aggressive moves, you know, getting Gavin Lux in with some positional flexibility. So I don't have the optimism for, I wouldn't bet as much money on them as say the Red Sox and Yankees as a,
right,
as a bet to make the playoffs. But I think it's more likely than not.
It's a division that, I mean, it's got some big names, yep, in it, but if you're gonna get a wild card, the NL Central is a good place.
It's open. Yeah.
It's a good place to be. Yeah. And I just, Franco, and I don't know what he has left in the tank, but his job in Cleveland is a much better indicator than his job in Boston, because he squeaked out a lot of young talent and did, yeah, a lot of, yep, good job with some young guys in Cleveland. So if he can actually do 80 to 90% of that, they're going to win 85 to 90 games,
yeah,
and that might be that might be enough. I mean, what St. Louis won and Chicago won 83. They didn't make the playoffs, but it was closer. Yeah. And I don't know. I think it's possible. Listen, we don't have a ton of time here, Dom. I wanted to segue. Do you have something you want to say real quick?
No, I was just going to say, you know, before last season, I said that the Reds were like one J.D. Martinez away from being a good team, and they needed that veteran presence on that team, I believe. And maybe Francona will give them that kind of subliminally just as a manager, and but we'll see. I think they could still use that extra little veteran presence on that team, you know.
Yeah,
very young.
They are young, and the truth is, I mean, it didn't end well, right, Dom? They really struggled down the stretch, and played themselves out of it. I don't know. I'm looking at it now. They lost
a lot of close games early, and they there's not a lot of life in the team. I mean, that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook, but it compared to the year before, where they had a 13 game winning streak, and like. It was longer than any winning streak that the Big Red Machine ever had. You know, So there was something. You had to go back to the Frank Robinson days. So there was no real spark in that team. There also it does not help when your closer totally is short of expectations. You know, Alexis Diaz, Edwin's brother, was an All Star in 2023, and he just was a disaster last year, and so. That can just sort of deflate your team too when your bullpen is worse than expected.
We don't know anything about that, Yankee fans.
His name is Dominic Rivers. He's our guest on Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. I'm Brian Shackman, along with John Senecal. My last question, or our last question to deal with here, is when you look at baseball and you live in Denver, you're born and raised a Reds fan, but just by geographical default, yep. I'm sure you follow the Rockies, and we follow them here a little more closely because their AA affiliate is in Hartford, right down the road from us, and we honestly love going to their games. I look at that division with the seriousness that Arizona has got talent, LA will do anything to win, San Diego finally overachieved, or at least achieved up to expectations, and the Giants have, I think, won more World Series than anyone in the division in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And my question is, will the Colorado Rockies ever win?
If you mean make the playoffs again, absolutely. I think they will. It might take 10 years. I hope it won't, because I like being in the town with. I like being.
You'll be in your 60s, Dom.
I know. Well, so the Rockies have been around since '93. I believe they've made the playoffs four times, maybe five.
One World Series.
They've never won a division. Never, not a single time.
That's incredible.
They came close one year. So, but as you know, there's the three wild cards. It's not a totally unbalanced schedule anymore, right? You play your division a little bit more, but when it was unbalanced, you know, three, four years ago, they would have had to play the
19
Dodgers
times
a lot more than they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So unlike the Yankees, who, other than Jason Dominguez, you know, he's still a prospect technically. He's still rookie status. I think they have, you know, four or five top 100 players, kind of like not as high up as the Red Sox, whereas. And just quickly, because you mentioned the Hartford Yard Goats, the guy I would say to watch, who could want to either be one of the greatest flops in history, or perhaps totally be a great comeback story, is Charlie Condon. I don't know if you're familiar with this guy, but he was pretty much the consensus number one draft pick last year. The Rockies had the third pick overall, and it ended up getting him. He fell to them. He's the one that set at the University of Georgia all these NCAA. I believe he hit the
40-something home runs.
Record.
I think. Yeah.
So why did
he
drop? Why did he? What's the story?
He struggled out the gates.
Series now. He had. If you just laugh at his numbers in the minors, he might have had like one or two home runs. And
yeah, I'm looking at him. He batted 189 or something, and he hit one home run.
So there's these theories now that there was like a massive cheating scandal going on in the SEC, that maybe he knew what was coming. That he can't hit breaking balls. So who knows if that's just stuff after the fact. Maybe he was hurt. Maybe. So my point is, if he comes out and has a good April, then he will be fun to watch in Hartford. He's a high A now. So he would, if he has a good start, that's where they're going to move him up to. And if he has a good start, that means he's, you know, hitting balls to downtown Hartford. And that's something to look forward to if I were going to be in talent.
He's listed as a number 12 overall prospect.
6'6".
You know what? I wonder if that's going to – what. I wonder if that's going to change, though. That's going into last year, I can believe that. Scouts very much differ on him now because it's okay. Was this a mistake?
I think it's his top 100 for the I think it's overall top 100. Yeah.
No, I believe that. After the minute the draft was over, I can believe that. Now it's certainly if you amalgamate all the prospect rankings, there's some people that would drop him out of the top 100 entirely.
Oh yeah.
He's got Bob Uecker stats.
Yeah. Professional baseball will humble you very fast.
Well, keep an eye. It'd be awesome if he were in Hartford.
Well, Dom was right though. He was like this big success story, like passed up by the teams and everything, and you know walked on. I think he walked on at Georgia, didn't he? I believe. I think.
I don't know if that could be the truth. I know that he did not have a great freshman or sophomore year, and then he popped. Oh, the other key factor for the detractors is. He did either the Cape Cod League or some other wood bat league, so he has never hit with a wood bat well. So he could be really interesting. He could be the next Brian Taylor or the teams, including the Reds. The Reds, even though they were over 500, just got lucky ping pong balls and had the second overall pick. And I'm one of these baseball nerds that sat on the couch and no one watches a baseball draft.
I watched it.
When they passed up Condon to get. The 100-mile-an-hour Chase Burns, the guy from Wake Forest, I groaned audibly. But it shows, you know, what do I know? I mean, I thank you for having me on your show and saying that I'm a baseball whatever I am. But scouting's an inexact science, and I'm not even a scout to begin with. So
yeah.
he's a huge wild card that could be he's going to be a big story whether he's a goat or a hero. But if he's a yard goat, he's probably going to be a hero.
It's funny you said scouting, and just real quick, I looked beforehand, and we were talking about the Rockies, and you look at like their coaching staff, and then you look at the Yankees coaching staff, and most teams have like, you know, 8 to 12 on-field coaches. Then you look at the behind-the-scenes people, and for, like, the Rockies, it was, like, 10, and the Yankees, it was, like, 29.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, everybody had a handler. Yeah. You know, so there you go. I mean, how do you compete with that?
Yeah, the Rockies gave him over $9 million in a bonus, so we'll see what happens. I mean, he's old enough to be in Double A. I mean, he's 21 years old. It'll be interesting to see if he makes it up next time I talk to the Yard Goats folks. And you have an open invitation, Dom. You know, we'll hook you up. You come down to Hartford, yeah. Connecticut, baby. I think there's a direct flight from Denver too, so we'll do the podcast again. We'll take you to a couple of games. It'll be fun.
We'll take you up with that. Bring the girlfriend. I love Bradley Airport. I lived in Northampton, Mass. For a while, so that was my airport. No, this has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, and I could talk to you guys all day.
Yeah, you're the best, Dom. Thank you, bud. Have a great one.
Take care,
Dom Rivers. Bye-bye. Joining us here on Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.
See it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of Season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.